You're listening to the Make It British podcast. I'm Kate Hills and I'm on a one-woman mission to save UK manufacturing. In 2008, I gave up my 20-year career as a fashion buyer because I was disillusioned with how much was being sourced overseas, and I set out to uncover some of the amazing businesses that are still making in the UK. Since founding Make It British, I've discovered that there is not only still tons of manufacturing taking place in Britain, but that it's a thriving industry. I invite you to join me each week when I'll be chatting to inspiring British-made brands and UK manufacturers and offering advice to product-based businesses that make in the UK. So with no further ado, let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to episode number 289 of the Make It British podcast. So I've got a guest on the show today. It's the award-winning Karen McLuckie from Beely's Adaptive Wear. When Karen's son became disabled at the age of 13, she realised that there was no clothes that were suitable for young wheelchair users like her son, Emil. So she set out to create a clothing brand that was easy to use for those that are in wheelchairs. With a mother who'd worked in the Manchester textile industry as a machinist back in the 1970s, Karen really wanted her clothing to be made in the UK. So in this episode, she talks through how she went from idea to getting the product to market, some of the people that have helped her along the way, how she got funding for her initial production run, and how she's overcome some of the challenges of running a small business whilst also working as a social worker in Stockport, Manchester. So here you go, over to my chat with Karen McLuckie from Beely's Adaptive Wear. Karen, thank you so much for joining me today on the Make It British podcast.
Thank you, Kate. Very pleased to be here. Very excited.
Brilliant. So I'm really excited to have you on because you're a fantastic example of a business who has, through their own personal experiences, discovered a gap in the market for a product and then set out to create the product to fit that gap. So do you want to start by telling everyone what your business does and how it all came about?
So I'm Karen McLuckie, director of Beely's Adaptive Wear, and we sell, well, I design, because I'm a designer, and sell adaptive wear for wheelchair users and disabled people. So it's kind of casual wear is the brand, what is the way we've been aiming for. It all came about after my son had a spinal cord stroke when he was 13 in 2016. Very quickly, out of nowhere, he just became paralysed from the chest down. So, you know, you're in hospital for 4 months and then they tell you to go home and crack on with your life, basically. And then we just noticed that every time he was transferring from his bed to his wheelchair to bed, all he could see was his lower back and his bum. Very undignified and also very cold because this happened in the January, so it was like winter. Nothing comes right down the back. He likes to wear joggers. Joggers are always easy for him because he's also autistic. And joggers have a very short rise in the seat. And as you would have seen, the young lads walking around with the boxes showing and the low rise joggers, you know, and that, and they still kind of wear that. But in a wheelchair, as you can imagine, you know, it's even further down and it's cold. So we started looking around at the adaptive wear market, which I didn't know existed. Found lots of joggers, trousers, very health looking, if you know what I mean, quite old fashioned material. Obviously it was beige, not fashionable because Emil was only 13 when he had the stroke. And then the other thing is that Emil has no bladder or bowel function, so we need to self-catheterize. So me and one of the school nurses were looking at a way for them to be able to do his catheterizing and it'd be more comfortable to have an access area. And joggers are not made with zips. So we looked around and, you know, there were no joggers with zips. We started putting zips in mainstream joggers, which was costly, and you still had the exposed bottoms. So I decided to design my own. And that's how it all started. My mum was a home machinist in Manchester. So we So, and obviously I'm from Manchester. So we, my mum was a home machinist back in the 70s. So I used to go to the factory with her, and they'd come in little bungled and they'd leave in long leather trench coats and all that kind of stuff back in the day. So I know a way, I know a little bit around a sewing machine. And so my mum sort of made a rough draft of a cheap pair we bought on eBay. And then we put the zips in and stuff like that. And that's how Beely's came about, basically. Took a bit longer than
amazing.
That, though.
Yeah. I was going to say, so how long did it take from the first kind of realising that there was this need and there was this gap in the market for products for people like your son, to actually getting the first product for sale and on the market so other people could buy it?
I'd say two to three years, really. But I think about it, I was looking at some old emails when I was sending emails, sort of making inquiries and talking to people about clothes. That was about 2019. So then we launched in NADEX at 2021. So it took a good few years of sort of researching, seeing what's out there, buying products that other people are making. And then we did some work with the, what's it called now? The Fashion Institute at the University of Manchester.
So
So they were doing a project with the Stroke Association, making clothes more accessible for people returning to work after having a brain stroke, using magnets and Velcro and stuff. So the timing was really great. So there was two students, Melissa and Rebecca, they're twins, and they made the first prototype from my pattern. And so that's how we got to see that it could actually work and how it actually looked, because we put the zip in a sort of a diagonal way. So it opens up wider than just a centre opening, if you know what I mean. And this is all from the prospect of it, you know, of you sitting, if you know what I mean. So it's designed for people who are sitting. So, you know, it covers the seat and the back and the bum and everything. So a good couple of years, good few years.
Yeah, so how many prototypes would you say you made in that time?
Well, we did a modelling shoot. I look back at some of the pictures now, and the joggers were absolutely ginormous because, again, you've got people who have never walked with cerebral palsy, so their legs and muscle mass is really slim. And then my son had walked till 13, so he had lots of muscle. So we had to really kind of fine-tune the pattern. I think we made about four drafts of it. And then we managed to do sort of two sizes, you know, a really slim fitting and a regular kind of fitting to sort of fit the two different types of muscle mass in the legs. Yeah. So about four or five drafts,
I'm actually surprised it was only four or five, because you've developed something there which is not your standard kind of clothing block size or fit, is it? So
no.
A challenge, definitely.
Yeah, because it was a way of, and I suppose we're still fine-tuning it all the time. I mean, the way we've made them, we've made the seat wider and the back higher. And then obviously the front is designed with the zip, but the zip's obviously on a diagonal. But obviously, at the moment, you know, it works the way it is. But I suppose, you know, you can see some joggers and they've got like, they're made with different kind of pieces or different blocks. But like you said, the trouser block, because I'm doing a design course now, so I know about blocks. So different the blocks, you can see how, you know, what the trouser, a basic trouser pattern looks like. And then obviously it's just making the adjustments to it, really. So it wasn't too difficult. I think the hardest bit was the legs. Getting the legs right so they fit right so they don't look too big or too baggy, because those early pictures the lads look really, the trousers just look too big on them, really. So
there's been a lot of ongoing development work as well. It wasn't just a case of samples ready to go.
No, because also you've got to find different types of wheelchair users, different types of disabled people, because that is the issue with clothing per se anyway. You know, like, you know, a size 12, 14 in Marks and Spencer's is different than a Next or Primark. And we're all different. Size 14s look different in everyone. So, and it's the same for wheelchair users. My son is quite tall. He's got a bit of a stomach. A lot of wheelchair users have big stomachs because they don't use the core. So you obviously need the trousers to come up high around the stomach so it sits kind of comfortable listening doesn't dig in. And obviously, like we said, you had the issue with the muscle mass in the legs for people who have never walked, born with a disability, and people who have become disabled, like my son, which is quite a high rate of people becoming disabled every year or every day. Somebody becomes disabled, has a brain stroke, a spinal cord stroke. RTAs is another big one, speaking to lots of guys that have had become paralysed after a car crash or been on a bike or been on holiday, fell off something. I mean, I've heard some awful stories, really, you know, diving into the sea, become paralysed from the neck down or chest down. So, yeah, so there's a massive array of disabilities and how people become disabled. So it is difficult to sort of get the one size fits all, isn't it? Which we know is difficult anyway in clothing. So we're still tweaking, I think, as we go along. Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's absolutely amazing what you've doing, what you're doing, what you've achieved here so far as well. Have you had any form of funding for this? How or what sort of support aside from the Manchester Fashion Institute?
Well, we did the crowdfunding and I've still been bootstrapping my day job. I'm a social worker, betrayed, mental health social worker. So I retired in 2021 to launch the business. Then I go back and still do a couple of days a week. So I'm still bootstrapping. Got a couple of grants, got some funding from Unlimited, which was really great. They support kind of organisations like social enterprises, anything with a social element to it. So got some funding from them. Tried for a couple of smart, innovative fundings, but they're really difficult to get. And funding is quite tricky. I mean, it's like writing a dissertation, isn't it? You know, you need to know how to write it. People can do it for you, but they'll take a percentage of what you raise and it's not guaranteed that you'll get anything. So I just keep working as a social worker, basically, and just keep putting it in.
Tell me more about the crowdfunding campaign then. How was that to initially buy the initial stock after you've done the development? And how which platform did you use for that and how did that go? How much did you raise?
Yeah, well, that was a fun. I'd never heard of crowdfunding and I actually kind of fell into it accidentally because NatWest was doing this campaign for women. I can't remember what it was called now. It was a campaign for women in business and how to raise money to fund your business. So I started applying for that. And then the way to raise the funding was through crowdfunding and it was through a crowdfunder, because I know there's crowdfunder and there's just giving. So this was an actual crowdfund. So I ended up just sort of tripping into it, really, and then putting a campaign together, hiring somebody to do all the social media. So this was all new to me, because like I said, I'm a social worker, betrayed. I don't know any of this. So I've been learning on the job, listening to the Make It British podcast and lots of others. Finding manufacturers, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so that's basically what we did. So just set the crowdfunding. So went around some local businesses in Manchester and Stockport to get rewards, I should say, for pledges. And that was really hard. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, because you literally sort of, you feel like you're begging people, you know. I got a lot of donations. And then obviously, then we went live. And then obviously you're on social media every day, trying to get into press, radio, all that kind of stuff. And again, it's really difficult. And I said I only raised £4,500. It's a lot of money, you know, in a month. And, you know, it just comes in dribs and drabs. So it was quite surprising how it kind of works, really. And so when we raised the £4,500, that's what we used to make a small one of the joggers. So I think we made about 250 pairs. In the three sort of base colours, sort of black, navy and grey, in a range of sizes. So again, to see what sizes sell, what doesn't sell, what colours sell. So grey is really popular at the moment. I always used to like navy. I thought navy would be still quite popular, but no, not many people like navy. So we stopped making the navy. But yeah, we made the three base colours, the sizes, and we made 250 pairs. And then I started sort of gifting them to influencers on social media wheelchair users, just reaching out to people saying, you know, this is what we designed. Do you want to wear a pair? People were also coming to me on social media as well because they'd seen us. We'd had a couple of interviews. And so it's just sort of grown organically from there, really. I haven't made any money yet. I don't know when I ever will. But yeah, so that's how it's kind of grown, really. And it's just sort of grown from there, really, with social media. And now we're looking at adding new, we've added some new products to the range as well. So we've now got the jogger shorts. And last year we launched the hoodies to match the joggers. And that's an adaptable hoodie with a zip going from the wrist right down the side to the end of it. The back is longer as well, so when you put it on and you move forward, you know, your back is still covered. And there's a zip here near the hood, so it's easier to put on and off if you've not got good dexterity as well. And so, yes, you can get like a full tracksuit now as well, and it looks quite smart.
Brilliant. And did your mum cut the patterns for those as well? Or is that Manchester Fashion Institute?
Yeah, no, well, we had like the base, like you said, the block with the zip and everything in. And then obviously we'd made a few pairs and it just didn't look right. So I managed to find, I'm using a factory in Leicester because one of the lecturers from the university, he had lots of contacts, so he was really good. So we've got a good factory in Leicester and I went to have a look, like you said, went down to have a look at the factory, been down twice and met him and had a look around the factory. So I know it's all okay because it's, you know, I know Leicester have had a bit of problems in the past. But I got lots of help and support from this from the lecturer at the university and some from there. So they made the kept making the samples for me in the different colours and the different sizes. And then once we did the photo shoot and I realised that they were still too big, I managed to find somebody else in Manchester. They still have some pattern cutters in Manchester. They're a dying breed, unfortunately.
but there are still some good pattern cutters out there.
So I met this great woman, Janet, and so she really brought it in and fine-tuned it for us, and that's the sort of main pattern that we've been using. And so, again, I've been able to keep it all in England, which has been really good. Leicester, London, they do a lot of grading there for me, so you can email patterns over. And obviously the pattern cutter, there's a couple in Manchester that I've been using as well. So they've been really good to keep sort of fine tuning stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
So why you mentioned there that everything's done in the UK, aside from the fact that you've been listening to the Make It British podcast, what's the reason that you wanted to keep the manufacturing in the UK?
I suppose it's just my own experience, really, sort of growing up with the whirring of an industrial machine in our house and thread everywhere. And me and my brothers having to turn out belts on wooden wooden spoons and collars and cuffs. And so I've seen how it all comes together. I saw how much my mum was getting paid for a full coat. And then I saw how much they're being sold for. And Manchester had massive factories. We sold all leather around Cheap Mill, Salford. The leather company she worked for was just in Longside up the A6 from us. And coats, I believe it's Cottonopolis, we were known as. So this is like in the 70s. So I know how much it cost to put it together and then the markup price. So I've always been a bit mean. I won't sort of pay for expensive clothes because I know how much they cost. And Marks & Spencer's had a factory in Russia. My friend worked there for years as a wages clerk. So we saw it all very locally. And then we've just seen it disappear and go abroad. And it's, yeah, we've just lost a massive trade. You know, the whole thing of being able to make, do and mend, you know, learning to sew, doing things, crafting. You know, we've all lost it abroad. And so it's a real skill that I think we've lost. So I think because of what I've grown up with, I didn't want to start liaising with abroad. And that's costly anyway. You know what I mean? I can jump and we can't drive to Leicester, but it's not easy to get off to Bangladesh, Portugal, Turkey, any of those places. And like we said, you don't know how good they're going to be, who's working in them. Yeah, so I thought, keep it in Britain. And that's what I've done.
Yeah, that's what I've done.
And again, like I said, it's a dying breed, but people are still there. And I think it's coming back up slowly again now. I live in Stockport as well. So Stockport, I've got a lot of mills. And I think a lot of it's starting to come back now. I keep saying if I was 10 years younger, I'd have tried to set up my own factory and we'd make them ourselves in hand. A bit like Bealey's World, a bit like, you know, Coronation Street and Underworld. This way, but I'm knackered. I haven't got the energy for that. So, but yeah, we'll still kind of make them the way we're making them for now, I suppose, as long as we're able to keep them at affordable prices, not a massive markup on them. But like you said, you know, we need to make a profit. So that's what we're looking at now for the next couple of years, how we scale up, how I take a salary from the business, all that kind of stuff. And that's quite hard because you're learning on the job all the time, you know. So it has been tricky, but it's been okay. We've done all right so far.
Yeah, I mean, getting your pricing right as a UK-made brand and also not underselling yourself. And I know it's probably particularly tough for you because you want to be accessible at price-wise for, you know, customers like your son and people that really need this clothing. That's a gap in the market because the high street are just not going to offer it because, as you've just described, the development process and the cost to develop it, and they just don't see, you know, it doesn't fit their mass manufacturing model. So you're doing is, you know, such a great service. Have you tried collaborating with any other kind of organizations to get the word out there about Bealey's Adaptive Wear and what you're doing?
This is what we're looking at trying to do now. And it's very hard. You know what I mean? To sort of like, how do you get a hold of people? You know, like even getting the website sponsored. And it's just like reaching out to people on LinkedIn and Twitter and stuff, because it's trying to find or know who you can contact. I'm quite old fashioned. I'd like to just sort of pick up a phone and speak to somebody, but you know, it's not that easy, is it now? And so it's then you send an email out and it's like a blanket email. So it looks like, so you might just end up in spam. So this is our next thing. Somebody you might be able to help me with, Kate.
Yes.
I'm going to say that's the next thing that we're looking at doing really now, to try and see if we can get our clothes sold on in mail order companies and mail order catalogues, or even in the big stores, you know, like a part of online. Because the thing with the high street, like you said, it's disappearing. There's no shops on the high street. So it is unfortunately going to be quite online and mail order. So that is the next thing for 2024, 2025, hopefully, to get some collaborations in. But yeah, it's not easy getting your foot in the door if you're not from that background or, you know, lots of people in the industry. So,
yeah. I mean, one thing I would say about, you know, you said about a blanket email, it might end up in spam. I always find if you're reaching out to someone, keep it as personalized as you possibly can for that business or that organization. And also, you know, this accounts for whether it's you're reaching out to the press or you're reaching out to a potential collaborator or even just to be on someone's podcast, to make sure you include in that message something that's individual, that's particularly relevant for them. Also, with them reading it, thinking, what's in it for me? So it's not just it's a one-way thing. Like, how can Bealey's Adaptive Wear and that business that you're approaching, for instance, you know, selling your products, how can that benefit them? Point out to them how that's a gap. And some of the statistics that you've just given me about how many more disabled people or people are becoming disabled now, and that the size of the market, I think a lot of the small businesses probably don't even, sorry, the bigger businesses probably don't even appreciate and don't even realize. It's only someone like yourself who's got in, you know, come to this situation to realize where there is this gap and there is this need. So I think it's amazing what you're doing. You've had some good press, haven't you? I've seen you've been featured on the BBC. How's that all come about?
Well, the BBC interview was with the university girls because they, I think, because the project they were doing, I think they spoke to somebody in the press office and they said, oh, this is really good. So we did, somehow we ended up having a BBC interview. So that was right at the beginning. And again, it's just sort of reaching out to people. And then Steph's Pat Lunch made contact with us in November, just before the show stopped and Reba's featured on. The whole program was about disability. It was amazing. I didn't know it was the whole program. I just thought it was a disabled business section, but it was all everything to do with disability for like 2.5 hours. So that was a really good experience. Emil took it all in his stride because we were on there together. And again, a lot of it is just like going on social media, isn't it? And putting yourself out there and then people are picking you up and saying, oh, I've heard about this. This is really good. Put myself forward for a couple of awards, which I won both of them.
Congratulations. Do you want to tell us what they were?
So they were both last year. So the first one was Fashion and Beauty Startup of the Year, Northwest, I'll have you know. And excellent. The other one was part of Biz Women, which is an organisation for, again, women in business. And so I won the Pioneer Pioneer Award 2024. And so I had to give a speech for that one. The other one, I just went up, got it and ran off. But the second one, I had to give a speech and that was really emotional. It's like, I was doing okay. And then as soon as I started talking about Emil, that was it. I was like, oh God, I'm going to start breaking down in a minute. But yeah, it's really good to be sort of recognised because I think a lot of the time I've always got a bit of imposter syndrome. You know, I'm a social worker from Stockport. What do I know about fashion? Obviously quite a bit now because I'm learning on the job. So when other people recognise you for what you're doing, you know, it's, it's been really good. And we've got a really good response off the Channel 4 as well. We've got like orders while we're actually on air, people from spinal unit triggering up, asking to send flyers out and information to give out to patients that have just recently had an injury. And, you know, if you look into some of those figures, it's pretty scary because we'll all become disabled in some way as we get older just by old age, you know. So I think initially we were looking at focusing on young guys, young men, teenagers, because my son was only a teenager. But they don't want to be singled out to be different. So we've just sort of opened it up and it's unisex and it's anybody, really, you know, young and old. So, you know, it's... Because it doesn't matter how old you are, you still want to look fashionable, stylish, don't you? So, yeah. But, yeah, we've done really quite well. Good press and good awards, 2 awards.
So what are the plans for the future then for Beely's Adaptive Wear? What do you see happening next?
Well, what I want to do is put a capsule wardrobe together. So we've got patterns made we've got the full track suits, there's jeans, T-shirts and underwear is what we're doing at the moment. So you've got like a staple wardrobe of underwear, jeans, joggers, T-shirts, all with subtle openings on them. So they just look just like mainstream T-shirts and hoodies, but they've got zips in. Bit of a stylish feature, but it also means it's easy to get on. And I suppose the main thing really is to look to try and get those collaborations in with some of the mail order companies or some of the other sort of online brands, and just to be able to raise more funds so we can then start to manufacture some of the other products that we want. The idea is to have the USP is the design, diagonal zip in the joggers and then change the materials, you know, so you can have like chinos, jeans, you know, you can have like nice tailored trousers with the, you know, the zip position in a different way. So when you're sat in your wheelchair, you can sort of get them on and off quite easily. So that is the plan, to build up the capsule wardrobe. But again, it's needing some really good investors. So that's something else we're looking at doing this year, getting some angel investing as well, or Dragon's Den, or anybody.
Yes, brilliant. Yeah. So if anyone's listening to this then, and they potentially want to invest in the business, or they want to buy some of your products, or just see what you do, where can they find you, Karen?
In Stockport. Just Wonderland Stockport, you'll find me. No, so my email is karen@beelysadaptivewear.co.uk. Beely's is his nickname, my son's nickname. His sister Esther used to call him Beely. So that's where Beely's Adaptive Wear comes from. And then obviously we've got the website, which is www.beelysadaptivewear.co.uk. Gosh, not easy, amazing. Is it rolling off these website addresses?
Don't worry, because I'm going to put the links to where everyone can find you, your website, your LinkedIn.
And we're all over the socials. Brilliant.
Oh, Karen, thank you so much for being a guest today. I think it's absolutely amazing what you're doing. Really, really, really is. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. I'm so honoured to be on, Kate. I feel really famous. I love listening to your podcast. So I'm great that I'm on. Thank you.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks, Karen. Bye.
And see you. Bye.